Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be here. Always a blast. Always a blast. And eventually I might have a co-host here for you all today. Terrific, but we're having technical difficulties. Don't worry, it's not like when, you know, we promised that Jane Silk's going to be the co-host for the day or the host for the day, and then suddenly something comes up in her extremely busy schedule to suddenly throw a wrench into the works, and all that hard work getting guests is just out the window. Oh my gosh, just totally gone. But anyway, the Silk or Joe Show does come to you courtesy of the Mainstream Media Network, so we want to thank them. And you know what? I'm trying to put together an app for them. I crashed my computer for 10 minutes last night, but anyway. So the Silk or Joe Show does come to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. So if you want to thank them for allowing us to exist, you can go to mainstreetradionetwork.com, which is a fantastic website, and it allows us all to see things about the Silk or Joe Show, podcasts of the Silk or Joe Show, all at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Don't forget to check out the Alan Nathan Show while it's up there. And it's while it's up there, make it sound like the Alan Nathan Show is going to disappear from mainstreetradionetwork.com. While you're up there, check out the Alan Nathan Show. And more information will be found about it on that website. I do host that show pretty frequently now, so you can find podcasts for that right there, mainstreetradionetwork.com as well. And it's a bit more often than the 1 hour a week I get. So, yeah, it's like 5 hours of listening to me speaking between the two shows. Obviously, not something we can cram into this 1 hour time frame that you have me on the weekends today. But we also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. And we can be found on social media, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, and X at Alan Nathan if you want to know if I'm hosting the Alan Nathan Show that day or not. Also, I was about to go into Alan Nathan Show mode and give you the topics for the day. Instead, I'm just going to continue speaking off the cuff, off the top of my head. So we have these excellent primaries that happened the other day, earlier this week. And I was talking about turnout. And yeah, I've seen some outlets supporting there isn't much GOP enthusiasm, it seems, at least in some districts in Texas primaries. But in others, there must be, because they've had higher turnout combined than anyone since 2018. And on top of that, the Republicans actually had pretty good, strong numbers. So maybe some districts are unenthusiastic, but others are quite enthusiastic. And Democrats, though, they take the cake. They are more enthusiastic by, I think it was like about 200,000 people or something. This was because they had 2.2 million people turn out for the primaries versus the GOP's 2 million. And this is the first time in a very long while. I think the outlet I saw, Texas Tribune, I think it was, that I was looking at, it was either our Washington Examiner, that said that this was the highest turnout they had in a primary since the year 2000. So that's a very strong number there. And you know, y'all might recall the year 2000. If you've been listening to reruns of the Alan Nathan Show on holidays, then yes, you definitely have recalled the year 2000. That was an election year. That was when Texas's own good old boy George W. Bush was going to the White House. And yet there was more Democrat turnout in Texas back then than Republican turnout. So what is it? What's happened? What happened in the interim? That was only 26 years ago, suddenly the state shifted red, I guess. Or was it red back then? I don't know. I didn't look that up. It just occurred to me off the top of my head as I was speaking, because I was just thinking about how we have on holidays very special editions of the Alan Nathan Show where we rerun old tapes that are new to you. So that's something to look up if you have historical interest, or if you just want to hear, you know, what was going on while you were a kid, or what was going on while... We just want to be reminded, that is, of the great 2000-2001, you know, pre-9/11 era, then we do have some special reruns for the Alan Nathan Show from that period of time. Although we might get into the post-9/11 era, too. I got tapes. The only place you can get those is, and of course, instead of getting into current events in the primaries, I'm taking a little time to pitch the special things we're doing for the Alan Nathan Show. But on holidays, you know, generally you don't expect people to be listening to the radio. I mean, on the 4th of July, come on, are you at the barbecue with Rush Limbaugh? Well, the late Rush Limbaugh. Were you at the barbecues with the late Rush Limbaugh blasting? Sorry, he's my go-to reflex because he's like the first radio host I ever heard. And I think Sean Hannity was second. But anyway, so are you at barbecues on July 4th with Sean Hannity blasting, or are you Memorial Day, drive into the parade or picnic or something with Sean Handy blasting? I don't really think so. So we just generally, also I'm pretty sure some studios are closed on those days, so we just run a rerun, you know? And I thought, well, instead of running something the previous week that may or may not even be needed by then, why don't we just an old show that no one has heard in 25 years? Because, you know, once it's aired, it's gone. It's not like back then in 2000, 2001, 2002, where I have all these cassette tapes from for the Alan Nathan Show. It's not like, you know, you have podcasts and streaming back then that are stored and archived on the internet forever. You know, it's just like any other radio back then. Once it's out there, it's gone. So, you know, it's new to you content. But anyway, back to the Texas primaries. At this point, we've got some runoffs going on. And, of course, Jasmine Crockett, the Democrat congresswoman, she dropped out of the Senate race. And as I was talking about on the Alan Nathan Show earlier this week, she's claiming racism. How can you claim racism when it's the Democrat primary that you're losing? Like, if it was against the black candidate, would it still be racism because the other black candidate still won? It doesn't make sense that you would claim racism, but, you know, she's saying, oh, it's because of these new voting rules. Black people just can't figure it out that they have to go to a particular polling place. And, of course, Democrats, this morning when I was looking up some stuff about it, I saw on Threads that a bunch of Democrats were just saying, agreeing with her, yes, it's racist, yes, it's racist, yes, it's racist. The Democrat primary was racist, there was racism, there was voter suppression in the Democrat primary, and they're blaming Republicans for it, even though Republicans didn't really have a dog in that race. Like, either candidate would have been terrible. And technically speaking, if you are to take it to the extreme that Democrats do, that all Republicans are racist, that all of America is racist, that America just isn't ready for a black woman president, as Democrats said after Kamala lost, and as Obama was out there saying, that even the black community, black men, weren't ready for a black female to be in power. That's what he was preaching before the election loss. So given all of that, you'd think that it would be a disservice to the GOP if they cheated such that the black woman lost, right? Because Democrats are saying that America is so racist and sexist that Kamala Harris lost. Well, in that case, wouldn't Texas, which the Democrats paint as being amongst the most racist places in the country and the most sexist in the country, wouldn't it be perfectly logical that the Republicans would want Jasmine Crockett to run? Because they would think that she would have a terrible chance at winning because of her gender and race. And so calling it racist and sexist to just keep her off the ballot in order to put in a worse candidate from their perspective, according to Democrats, it just doesn't make sense. So no, they're just screaming racism and sexism because they're fanboys and fangirls of Jasmine Crockett, and that's it. They can't understand that she just ran a terrible campaign. Politico actually was quoting fellow state representatives, and they, or well, not fellow Democrats, that is, fellow Democrats who were state representatives, is how I should have said it. You know, one of them was saying, yeah, she just ran an absolutely awful campaign. That's all there is to it. Didn't do a good job. And then also the Democrats outspent her as well. The main part, like, that primary race was one of the most expensive ones out there. And it's because Democrats were outspending on her opponent. So it's racist when Democrats outspend on her opponent, set up a stunt with the Stephen Colbert's talk show in order to push her opponent forward and bring him up out of nowhere, bring him to national light. And yet it's racist because of Republicans somehow rigging the race in favor of the candidate that the Democrat establishment wanted. Now, this is definitely, I think this is just cognitive dissonance at place right here. Like, Jasmine Crockett, of course, she's just going to say where the hell she wants to. She wants to remain in good standing with the party. Maybe she thinks she has a chance with some other office with them in the future. So she doesn't want to blame the party at large. She wants to ingratiate herself to them. But her voters, you know, they're thinking, they're not going to want to say that they were screwed over by their party. They're not like Bernie Sanders voters back in 2016 who were very happy to say that the election was rigged against Bernie. No, they want to believe in their party above all else. So they're going to say that it had to be someone else. It had to be the Republicans. Somehow the Republicans sabotaged this primary, and somehow they did it in this absolutely contradictory fashion that somehow, you know, it worsened their chances as far as Democrat talking points are concerned. Because, again, to further emphasize this point, mostly because we have no time to get into a new point, Democrats think that this country is too racist and too sexist to elect a black woman. So what do Republicans do? Sabotage it so a black woman isn't the candidate that they're running their guy against? In Texas, the heart of racism as far as Democrats are concerned? They went so far as to elevate Juneteenth to a national holiday because of their hatred of Texas. It isn't because Juneteenth had anything to do with the end of slavery. That was a date in December. That was the last time there was a slave in this country, December of 1865. No, they elevated Juneteenth for their hatred of Texas, their hatred of Republicans. That's why they did it. And they consider Texas to be the heart of bigotry. And you know what? They're trying to say that Republicans deliberately sabotaged a race to get rid of a black woman when, if Texas is the heart of bigotry, having her on the ballot would have been to their benefit. More at Silker Dish after this.
Looking for ways to save in today's housing market? For a limited time, Chase Home Lending is discounting interest rates on mortgages, including new home loans and refinances. This offer is available to all eligible homebuyers and homeowners nationwide who lock in their discounted rate now through Sunday, March 8th. During this offer period, you can access interest rate discounts that may help lower monthly payments, access equity, and make home ownership more affordable. You can also combine the rate sale with other Chase benefits for additional savings and lock in your rate for up to 90 days. Customers can get support via their mobile app, online, or in person at one of Chase's 5,000 branches nationwide. To learn more, visit chase.com/discount rate or connect with a local Chase Home Lending advisor. JPMorgan Chase N.A., member FDIC, and equal opportunity lender.
Spring break is right around the corner, and Sarasota, Florida is ready to welcome travelers with warm Gulf breezes, white sand beaches, vibrant culture, and Florida's newest destination aquarium. Kevin Cooper, Vice President for Communications and Strategic Initiatives at the Moat Marine Laboratory and Aquarium.
With the debut of Moat Science Education Aquarium, Sarasota now offers a window into the globally significant marine science research conducted at Moat Marine Laboratory and the perfect addition to a beach vacation. Next door, Nathan Benderson Park is the gold standard for rowing and outdoor fitness, home to an Olympic-level course, world championships, and a 3.4-mile lakefront trail where visitors can walk, run, bike, or relax in nature. Next to those two is University Town Center, meaning travelers can explore marine life in the morning, kayak or walk in the late afternoon, and enjoy 300 more shops, restaurants, and entertainment options just steps away.
For more, go to visitsarasota.com.
Hi, this is pharmacist Ray Solano with an important tip to save you money on your prescriptions. Imagine affordable medication and programs that get rid of the root cause of chronic conditions such as elevated blood sugar, blood pressure, and difficulty remembering your keys or maybe even where your car is. PD Labs Pharmacy is a special compounding pharmacy providing service, solutions, and access to on-site trained telemedicine staff available to answer your questions. Today, many people have discovered personalized prescriptions tailored to you with powerful results such as feeling better. Check out our website, pdlabsrx.com. Our nationwide coverage and 26 years in pharmacy allows us to offer medications at almost half the price of local pharmacies. Switch your pharmacy to PD Labs and experience the real service without the expensive bill. Call us at 888-909-0110. That's 888-909-0110 or pdlabsrx.com. Remember, you have a choice in healthcare.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs. at pva.org.
Back to the Silker Joe Show, co-host Joe with you all today, and I do bring in a co-host of my own for purposes of prepping him for perhaps one day covering for Karen, where Karen Cataline used to be on the Al Nathan Show, where she has decided to go into a soft retirement. But we have William Hellman here. He is a political consultant with experience on congressional campaigns, a former member and candidate for the Baltimore City Republican Central Committee, as well as author of Big Fat Liars, Nine Core Lies of the Left-Wing Establishment. His website is williamjhellman.com. William Hellman, appreciate you joining us. How are you? And I do not hear him, so that could be an issue. William Hellman, how are you?
I'm okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Good. We're now in a Sprint commercial from 20 years ago. So I spent the last segment ranting about the Texas primaries. Did you catch any of it? What's your view?
Well, you know, I was less concerned with the Jasmine Crockett-Talcario race, although that was hilarious. And, you know, I'm more interested in what we got out of the Republican primaries, which is, you know, the end of Eye Patch McCain.
Yeah, Dan Crenshaw. Yeah, he came in, he seemed like a good guy, and I was kind of on his side when he came in. And, you know, especially when I think it was Saturday Night Live or some comedian made fun of him for having the eye patch. But then he just kind of went total never Trumper.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, I used to like the man a lot myself. And even disliking him, you know, I'd still say the Saturday Night Live comedian is just, well, he's a Saturday Night Live comedian. What else needs to be said? They're all unfunny, you know. It ain't been the same since they cut Norm MacDonald.
Yeah, he will be greatly missed. He was a good one. But I don't know, Kenan Thompson there. But anyway, though, so what? So you're happy that Dan Crenshaw was out. What about this Jeff Cornyn, Ken Paxton thing? What do you see going with that? Because Jeff Cornyn, you know, definitely is being smeared as kind of almost in the Never Trump Republican name only wing of the party himself. Ken Paxton seems to have been a good attorney general for Texas, and now their race has gone into a runoff because they had like Wesley Hunt as well. So now his voters are going to be going to one of those candidates. And boy, this one person that worked with a PAC for Jeff Cornyn's group, like was the leader of the PACer, so to speak. He was just outright smearing Wesley Hunt for after he dropped out. Just like, oh, that guy, his vanity trip, vanity something was what the language he used. Just referred to it as a vanity trip or something, the campaign.
Well, yeah, and I think the key thing here, as you said it, is what will the Wesley Hunt voters do? Because, you know, yeah, Cornyn has not been the best on the record of voting with the president's agenda. At the same time, Paxton, I like Paxton. I would favor him in this race if I had a vote in it. But Paxton has a lot of scandals going on right now, a lot of which are, you know, artificially made up by Democrats and rhinos. But it's still a thing that's in the mind of the voters. So it's really anybody's guess as to what's going to go on in the runoff. But, you know, if, like I said, if I had a horse in the race, I would want to back Paxton in this because I feel like he's going to be better towards fulfilling the agenda.
Yeah, what does that say, though, about the establishment Republican Party and what we can expect for them in the midterms? Because I was talking about this on the Al and Nathan show earlier this week, how, you know, the Republicans, when they seem to be getting momentum, they sabotage themselves. The establishment does, if it seems to be like pro-Trump momentum. Like in 2022, for example, you know, you had plenty of people sour about the loss in 2020 or the steal in 2020, however you look at it. And then, you know, Roe v. Wade being the most prominent issue that year, we have Lindsey Graham come out and say, oh, the Senate's going to ban Roe v. Wade when we are going to ban abortion altogether when we go into office if Republicans seize power. Like, that's not a winning issue for any but a most fringe part of the Republican Party. So it seemed like he was out there sabotaging the party just because they wanted to keep the Trumpers out from winning. And then later that year, you had money being routed from pro-Trump or Trump-endorsed candidates to folks like Lisa Murkowski, who never found a Democrat proposal she didn't like, apparently, and yet plenty of objection to Republican ones. And then this year now you have, aside from Tom Tillis making an ass of himself on the Senate floor, or well, actually it was in the House hearing up with DHS Secretary Kirstie Noem, where he's just spouting all these left-wing talking points at her to the much applause from the Democrat Party. Now you have the establishment making up all these lies about Ken Paxton.
Well, no, absolutely. And that's, again, that's what the rhinos do. If they feel that their grift, that their, you know, standing is actually going to be at risk, they will attack their own, but they're never going to attack the Democrats as hard. I mean, and, you know, I use the term rhino more loosely than a lot of people, but like, let's take a look at the Matt Gaetz thing. And yeah, I would say Matt Gaetz is a rhino. The same week he got rid of the House Speaker, there was supposed to be a motion on the floor to censure, I think it was Jamal Bowman, the guy who pulled the fire alarm. Mm-hmm. And so instead of getting rid of a Democrat, we got rid of the Speaker of the House and then proceeded to get rid of a House Republican, you know, George Santos. So that's the thing with rhinos. They will gladly put the knife in the back of our party, in the back of our agenda, in the back of our voters. But yeah, crickets when it comes to Democrats.
Right. And we can only imagine this year with Trump trying to push through his agenda. I think that's why, too, we're seeing a lot of push by Trump with this foreign policy, because that's an area he actually has some control. You know, after the first year of domestic policy, where it ends up tied up in the courts and the GOP and Congress didn't seem to be all that much help to him, when a lot of stuff, you know, like the Doge cuts, for example, all that needs to be needs to go through Congress, and the GOP just, you know, kind of slept on that one. And you know, they have the power to do stuff, they just decide not to wield it. So Trump now, you know, what can I do to help keep these people in case I can use them, in case they want to be helping me out later in my term to avoid being a lame duck president? Well, get some foreign policy wins here, do something for my agenda, at least before Democrats can take over both houses and try and stop him with even more tools.
Absolutely. And honestly, the biggest thing right now we're seeing the rhinos sleep on is the SAVE Act, because they're playing games with the filibuster. You know, if they want a filibuster, they need to do the speaking filibuster. But no, they want to play, you know, good old gentlemen. When we're literally dealing with voter fraud in the country, we've got a bill to make voter fraud virtually impossible, and they want to play good old gentlemen. Even though this is a winning issue with every demographic, you're seeing highly skewed numbers. Like, I think 76% of African-American voters, 80-some percent of Latinos, every demographic wants to see voter ID, wants to see secure elections, and it's a winning issue. We can totally nuke the filibuster on this, and it will not hurt us politically. And yet, John Thune, a McConnell sycophant, is letting it sit. Even though he claims up and down he supports it, he is the Senate leader. He needs to get it on the floor. And if somebody wants to filibuster, if Schumer wants to sit there and make a donkey out of himself on the floor of the Senate for 40-some hours, go ahead. At the end of the day, the SAVE Act needs to pass. And the rhinos, again, would much rather stick it to Trump than do what's in the best interests, not just of our party, but of the country as a whole.
Yeah, I've been attributing other motives to them. You know, you're right, Trump derangement syndrome on the part of rhinos could be it. But you know, I've been wondering, too, how many of them are benefiting from stuff that the SAVE Act would undermine? You know, it's
Murkowski.
Not a good look.
Murkowski.
Yeah, it's just not a good look either way. But William Hellman, you're going to be with us for the rest of the program. And listeners, we're going to have another guest on for the next segment. So that's something to look forward to. More Silker Joe Show after this break.
This wasn't random. Whoever did this wants to send a message. He's preparing.
What's the flavor of psychopath we're dealing with here?
Someone who craves power and control.
Worship me. Your souls are ready.
That's a clip from season 2 of NBC's hit series, The Hunting Party, a crime procedural about a team of investigators who track down and capture the most dangerous killers the world has ever seen, all of whom have just escaped from the pit, a top-secret government prison. On tonight's episode, multi-Emmy Award winner Kelsey Grammer guest stars as cult leader and serial killer Noah Cyrus. With the clock ticking, a former FBI profiler played by Melissa Roxburgh and her team races to stop Cyrus's enigmatic plans, but soon discover that not everything is as it seems. Don't miss The Hunting Party, tonight at 10 p.m., 9 Central, on NBC.
At Culver's, we believe the best meals are shared with the ones you love most. Creating lasting memories and celebrating traditions doesn't have to be complicated. It can be as simple as spending time with your friends and family at a local restaurant. We're proud to share our take on the classic Wisconsin fish fry with our guests. Our North Atlantic cod and butterfly jumbo shrimp are perfect for satisfying any seafood craving. These crispy, flavorful menu items are cooked to order for the freshest taste and sure to make your family dinners this season extra memorable. We value serving our guests with hospitality. You can feel confident your family will be served a meal made with the same care and quality you would expect from a home-cooked meal. At Culver's, it's our tradition to treat every guest like family. This season, order ahead on Culver's.com or the Culver's app to get a taste of your fish fry favorites.
Volkswagen introduced a bold new ad campaign during the big game last Sunday, a reimagined version of the iconic Drivers Wanted. The new campaign invites a new generation to embrace individuality, curiosity, and saying yes when opportunity calls. Rachel Zaluzic, Volkswagen's SVP of Customer Experience and Brand Marketing.
Now is the perfect moment to remind our enthusiasts why they love Volkswagen and to welcome others to join in. Drivers Wanted is more than a message. It's an invitation to take the wheel and experience the freedom and fun on the road.
The commercial, a callback to the brand's popular Drivers Wanted ads from the 90s, reminds people that on the road of life, there are passengers and there are drivers. It's a nod to the original era of Drivers Wanted, reimagined for a new audience with the same spirit and energy. To view the campaign film, The Great Invitation, and maybe find yourself in a Volkswagen of your own, visit VW.com.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today, and still joined by co-host for the show, William Hellman. And we have a special guest for this segment, Kent Strang. He is Managing Director for Americans for Prosperity. Kent, appreciate you being on board for the show. How are you today?
Great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Yep, glad to have you. Now, our co-host William here, he had a question, burning question about how the Iranian crisis will affect energy and the domestic energy in the country. Will, do you have that on hand?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's more about how it's perceived. So, you know, obviously, we're seeing what the Iran conflict means for energy prices. I drove, you know, by the gas station this morning, and we're back to Biden pricing. How would you explain to voters, though, who aren't savvy, the difference between our gas prices going up because we're in a war with terrorists and our gas prices going up because we have a poor negotiator in the White House? I mean, how would you explain that difference to voters so they'd understand it?
Yeah, I didn't hear the question at all. I'm sorry for the dead air, team.
Oh. Sorry about that.
You don't seem to be able to hear our guest host. He was asking how to explain to voters the difference between gas prices being high because of conflict with Iran because we're in the war against terrorism versus just a bad negotiator-in-chief being unable to obtain good prices for oil.
Thank you,
sure, Joe. Well, I certainly apologize for not being able to hear your co-host there. But yeah, I mean, obviously oil and petroleum is a global market. About 20% of global petroleum comes from the Strait of Hormuz, which is just outside of Iran. And when there's volatility in those marketplaces, we see volatility in the market. I think the gas buddy was looking at a 10 to 30% increase due to what's happening in Iran right now. But like that is why it is so important for the United States to recognize that energy security is national security, and why it's important for the United States to continue to drive energy policies in America to unleash energy. And we saw President Trump and this Republican Congress do exactly that. They repealed about 60 of Biden's bad Green New Scam regulations to make it easier to get at oil, natural gas, and other resources that we have here in America because we have abundant resources. And then in the One Big Beautiful Bill, the Working Families Tax Cut, it made it easier to get offshore leases so we can have the energy we need here in America. So we're not as reliant on foreign conflicts or other countries when these sort of things happen. And we have the energy we need here in America to be able to make it so that we're not worried about conflicts in Iran or Venezuela or other places.
That's a pretty excellent explanation.
Yeah, energy security is absolutely important here. And, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, in the future, though, because we have our own issues domestically as well with energy. You know, there's permitting reforms that need to be done. There's overregulation in our energy field. And certainly, I mean, if we didn't have that one big, beautiful bill and somehow conflict broke out with Iran, I don't think the Biden of Kamala Harris administration would have had this happen. But it was going to happen at some point. If we didn't have the one big, beautiful bill teeing us up for this, I mean, where would we be right now?
Well, we'd have $4 gas, and Kamala would be sending pallets of cash to terrorists.
Well, right. I mean, we would be in a mess. I mean, look what the Biden administration did on energy was an absolute disaster. We all remember $5 gasoline, how painful that was for average, everyday American citizens. And we have not seen that in this conflict so far. And look, we want to put money back in Americans' pocketbooks. And when they went to fully wind, solar projects, green new energy projects, we saw that those absolutely didn't work. They continue to repeal those projects. We want to make life easier for Americans. One way we can continue to do that, as you mentioned, is to pass permitting reform. And Congress should look at this very closely, not just because of the conflicts we have right now with Iran, but because it's good policy. There's too much red tape. We need to cut it. There are too many overburdens and regulations, and we need to be able to have the ability to put shovels in the ground for projects that are not only for energy, but are for housing, to be able to build in America, put shovels in the ground, put people to work, and make it easier to build here in America so we have the economy we need, the pro-growth agenda to make Americans not only get by, but thrive and live their American dream.
Absolutely. What do you see on the horizon, though? What dark clouds do you see on the horizon for energy independence? Because I know on a federal level, we're nailing it by repealing these regulations. But on, you know, state-by-state level, apparently we've got California trying to make life harder for the refineries. Here in Maryland, you know, we have a complete energy crisis because our governor here has basically made it impossible to open new power plants and is just having us import our energy. So what other dark clouds do you think you see on the horizon with that? And how do you think at the federal level we can cut that off at the pass?
Sure, there's certainly a partnership amongst the federal, the state, and the locals when it comes to doing this. I don't know if I can do anything for California. Governor Newsom loves high gas prices. He loves bad energy policy. I don't know if I can fix that or not, but we certainly need to take a look at that. One thing that I would encourage Congress to do is, look, we've done an incredible job, and President Trump's done an incredible job of repealing those bad executive orders, Biden. What I would caution him and Congress to look at is to codifying President Trump's energy executive orders into law. What we don't want to happen is to have another president come along, like a Gavin Newsom, like an AOC, like an Elizabeth Warren, like a Bernie Sanders, God forbid, and repeal the good work that he's done. That's why the function of Congress is so important. Get in there, codify that to make sure that that's standing law, not just executive order. I think that would be a really good step to make sure that we have the energy security we need, not just during the Trump administration, but for decades to come.
Excellent, yeah.
So, in the meantime, though, as far as permitting reform goes, I think that's going to be a bit of a hard sell to the voting population and the politicians. I mean, there is, don't get me wrong, there is popular support amongst both sides for permitting reform as to what each side means by permitting reform. You know, they'll have to negotiate that out. But it's something where it's not going to be an overnight winner. It's going to be more of a long-term thing. Because you can, the moment you pass the legislation for permitting reform, you know, it's not like immediately oil wells will open up all across the country and gas prices will drop as soon as the President Trump signs that legislation. It's going to be a while. It's going to take a while to get effect. If anything, a careful politician would have wanted it done at the beginning of last year so that by now, by the midterms, they would have been able to see something from it.
Sure, I would love that to happen, but you know the time is now, and let's get rolling, right? But I agree with you. But look, voters, we just did a poll, and some of the key soundings that we found, that voters largely believe that government makes things harder, not easier. And we found that 61% of Americans feel that way. And so while it may not be immediate, there have been things that we've seen be immediate. Look, we don't have those $5 gas prices. The United States leads the world in liquid natural gas production. We are making big strides on energy production. I don't want to act like we're not, but we can codify it into law for the long term. And certainly we need to think about the now, but we need to think about future generations. We need to think about American competitiveness. How are we going to compete with China in the AI revolution that's coming? How are we going to be a global superpower when it comes to energy production? Because that AI race is coming. It's the next wheel. It's the next innovation. It's the next internet. And if we're not prepared to challenge China, we're going to be behind, and we're going to need the energy to be able to do that. And so whether it comes this year, next year, or when, it's got to get done soon if we want to compete.
Right, because go ahead, Bill.
Sorry, ahead. I was about to say, I absolutely agree. And like you said, it's important to codify these, because the results are really only going to show long term, or like become apparent in the long term, you know.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the AI goes, that the AI, you know, people might not think it because you got your little laptop in front of you. AI isn't your little laptop in front of you. AI, it's like going back to the 1950s as far as we're talking power consumption and scale of buildings needed to house it. So that requires reliable energy in bulk, in mass, not familiar to the modern electronics consumer.
Sure, it's not just typing in prompts to ChatGPT like I do on a daily basis, right? I also think about housing, right? So many Americans right now are concerned about housing costs, and And some of that certainly is because of the high interest rates that we're left with because of the Biden administration. Look, when you spend $5.5 trillion in new spending, you usher in 40-year high inflation. The way to tamp that down is through higher interest rates, and Americans are suffering through, I think they just came just under 6% to be able to borrow money. We need to still solve our housing process. Permitting reform also helps address our housing crisis.
That's going to be definitely useful. Kit Strang, appreciate you being on the show to talk about this. About 10 seconds, where can listeners find more about Americans for Prosperity?
Check us out at americansforprosperity.org. Get involved.
All right, listeners, that's something for you to look at during the break, but we have more Silker Joe Show on the other side.
Adult growth hormone deficiency, or GHD, is a rare disorder caused by decreased or lost growth hormone production. About 6,000 new U.S. cases are diagnosed annually, though it often goes underdiagnosed and undertreated. GHD can be caused by brain tumors or head injuries, congenital defects, or surgical or radiation damage. Adults with GHD can face a wide array of symptoms. Skytrofa, Lanipeg Somatropin TCGD, is FDA approved to treat adult GHD. Lanipeg Somatropin is a prodrug of somatropin, or human growth hormone, administered as a once-weekly injection.
This is Dr. Lisa Abbott, a board-certified endocrinologist. For over 25 years, daily injection of somatropin has been the standard of care for adult growth hormone deficiency. Yet the burden of daily injections is thought to be a reason why patients do not follow their treatment regimens. For patients who look for a less burdensome treatment regimen, Skytrofa, with its once weekly injection, may help improve adherence.
Skytrofa is a prescription medicine for the treatment of growth hormone deficiency in adults and children 1 year and older who weigh at least 26 pounds, 11 and a half kilograms. Don't take Skytrofa if you are allergic to Skytrofa or any of its ingredients. If you have a critical illness caused by certain types of heart or stomach surgery, trauma, or breathing problems, if you have eye problems caused by diabetes, if you have cancer or other tumors, if you are a child with closed bone growth plates, or if you are a child with Prader-Willi syndrome who is severely obese or has breathing problems, Skytrofa may cause increased blood sugar levels, increased risk of growth of an existing tumor or cancer, or increased risk of a previous tumor or cancer returning, increased pressure in the skull, hip and knee pain or a limp in children, slipped capital femoral epiphysis, which may lead to bone tissue dying due to lack of blood supply, osteonecrosis, worsening of curvature of the spine in children, scoliosis, severe and constant stomach pain, which could be a sign of pancreatitis, and loss of fat and tissue weakness at the injection site. Hormone levels should be monitored during treatment. Tell your doctor all medical conditions and medicines you take. Common side effects in children include viral infection, fever, cough, nausea, and vomiting. Common side effects in adults include swelling due to fluid buildup and low thyroid hormone. Talk to your doctor to see if Skytrofa is right for you. Please visit skytrofa.com/AGHD. That's skytrofa.com/AGHD for full prescribing information and to learn more. Or call 1-844-442-7236. This is brought to you by Ascendis Pharma Endocrinology, Inc.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk.
with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's H-E-L-P-P-V-A.
Welcome back to the Silver Joe Show. Everybody, co-host Joe with you all today, wrapping up with William Hellman, also as co-host, as best as we can. Will, appreciate you sticking with us for this show.
Always a pleasure.
So what's your opinion on this Iran conflict? We kind of started to get into that a little bit in the last segment about how it might affect domestic energy production, but how do you, you know, see this playing out, and how do you see the popularity amongst the Trump supporters? We know Democrats, of course, are opposed to it because they're opposed to everything, but how are Trump supporters, in your opinion, viewing it?
Well, I mean, I haven't been getting out much lately, so I haven't seen the reaction of anybody except for the people I follow on Twitter. A lot of the reaction I've seen has been positive, but that's because I'm not in the Tucker Carlson sphere of things. My personal opinions on it is that I think this is overdue. We've allowed, and to be fair, I feel the same way about North Korea. We have allowed little states like North Korea and Iran to hold a lot more significance and influence than they really should just through threats of terror. You know, this is the war on terrorism we should have had 20 years ago, you know, and the fact that we're just now having it. And look, I've got a personal horse in this race myself. Iran is a human rights violator. They throw people like me off the top of buildings. So I am absolutely glad to see people like Khamenei getting extra crispy, you know.
Yeah, and I would argue Iran is more significant than North Korea simply because North Korea isn't the largest state sponsor of terrorism on the planet. I'm not even sure North Korea has the money to afford a single terrorist, let alone be the largest state sponsor of them. And certainly China would not be too happy if North Korea got out of hand like that, because they're right on China's border, and North Korea might get ambitious and decide to go into China with the terrorism. So certainly Iran is the much bigger threat out of the two. And as far as their human rights violations, you would think, you know, Democrats would be on board with taking that. But instead, you know, the Ayatollah Al-Khamenei, he, in 1981, when he was first elected as president in Iran, like
can
that's the start of his...
I just correct you real quick? He's not the Ayatollah. He's the good Ayatollah. But go on.
Fair enough. The ex-Ayatollah, shall we say. Before he was Ayatollah, he was president of Iran, first elected in 81, and he ran on a campaign of stripping the country of American liberalism, which would include a lot of things that Democrats would favor. Yet, you know, you have the Washington Post and New York Times giving him glowing reviews, and the New York Times gave him a better headline for his obituary than they did for Dilbert creator Scott Adams, who they just smeared as a racist right there in the headline. But instead, they refer to the Al-Khamenei as a hardline cleric. Like, they really both, they just did not find any character flaws in them that they didn't like.
Well, you're right, and that's because there is literally no difference between the current Democratic Party and the current Iranian regime. You know, the Democratic Party right now is overrun by radicals and will pick any radical position as long as it's pro-trans and pro-Muslim. Look, honestly, again, I mentioned earlier, Iran is one of the biggest human rights violators of gay men and women. And one of the things they're known for is the advances they've made in sex change surgery. Because this is a country where they would take gay men and either give them the option of facing the death sentence, because the Quran says gay men need to be killed, or going through a forcible sex change surgery. And you know, if the Democrats could do that over here, they absolutely would. They love stuff like that. They love radical stuff, you know. And that's why they're reacting the way they are now to Khamenei, because in Khamenei, in the death of Khamenei, they'd see the death a lot of what they stand for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it's kind of a crazy symmetry.
Yeah, and what you were saying about the gay rights and stuff, that reminds me of the Soviet Union, which, you know, on the 100th anniversary in 2017, the New York Times famously winning a Pulitzer Prize for lying about the Ukrainian Holocaust that was perpetuated by the Soviet Union. In 2017, they had a bunch of glowing reviews of the Soviet Union, painting it as paradise on earth, talk about all the great things they did, how progressive they were, and all that. But the Soviet Union had a similar policy to Iran about homosexuality. If you were a man, you just weren't, because I guess transitioning surgeries for men weren't very good back then. But if you were a lesbian, you were forced to transition into a man somehow or other, however they did that. So Iran seems to, as you said, just had the similar policies. And let's parallel that to what's going on in America with trans surgeries today, where you have Johns Hopkins University come out and undo, 50, 60 years of feminism and say, it turns out if you actually are a child, a three-year-old, and you don't adhere to rigid gender stereotypes, then we need to get you on hormones. We need to get you transitioned ASAP.
Absolutely. And it's, again, it is almost forced the same way the Iranian regime has done it. They want to do it behind parents' backs. They push it. It's a social contagion, to be honest. Don't get me wrong. I think there is a very, very infinitesimally small amount of the population that actually is transgender. That's not what we're seeing. What we're seeing is a social contagion pushed by Democrats. And again, it has this sick parallel to Iran.
And there was a study done a couple of years ago about that showed that there was a strong social component with people deciding that they were no longer the gender they were born with, whether it was they wanted to fit in, peer pressure, or whatever. There was a study done on it, and the person who did that study was forced to retract it by severe pressure from the trans community and the alleged scientific community, trying to say, not because of anything wrong with the study or how it was conducted, but rather because they said it was bigoted.
Absolutely. And honestly, we're coming close to the end here, aren't we? So I also want to touch on the other thing where Democrats are being a hypocrite over this is women's rights. You know, they claim to be the party of women's rights. They're sitting here now and they're lying and saying, oh, the SAVE Act will take away the women's right to vote. And yet here they are defending a regime where not only do women not have the right to vote, they don't have the right to show their face in public. You know, I mean, if you look at historical pictures of Iran before Khamenei came to power, and or the guy before him anyway, if you look at Iran before its revolution, you would almost think it was a normal country. You had pictures of women in the latest styles of clothing, and now it is what it is. It looks like a 13th century nightmare.
Yep, and that's feminism according to Democrats, who, you know, their feminists are out there donning such gear to show that they have solidarity with Iranian women or Muslim women, not understanding anything about what they're doing. But anyway, William Hellman. Anyway, William Hellman, appreciate you joining us for the show, such that you could, because I hear your microphone crackling a bit. But listeners, appreciate you all joining us, too, for this program, this special hour of the Silk or Joe Show, as we approach my 5th anniversary of hosting this program, which comes later this month. Well, with my name attached to this program, I should say. I've been hosting for a little bit longer than 5 years. Anyway, our websites are MainStreetRadioNetwork.com and AlanNathan.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.